Welcome to another episode of the Left of Lansing podcast with Pat Johnston. A progressive insight into Michigan's political and cultural world. And of course, an entertaining podcast designed to shine a light on how to make Michigan's political machine work for the people. Now, from the Left of Lansing headquarters, located in his attic, here's the award-winning Pat Johnston.
Oh, yeah! Welcome to another installment of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. I'm Pat Johnston, podcasting, as Jessica said, from my Gratiot County attic. And I have to tell you, I am ready for the fall season, but I just saw that we're getting 80-degree weather this weekend and into early next week. I know that probably makes some of you very happy, but I'm ready to bust out my flannels again. I love my flannels. I want to wear my flannels again. Can't do that when it's 80 degrees. And I already removed some of our AC units out of the house, which means, of course, it's going to be 80-degree weathers for the next few days. And I'm noticing the Detroit Lions bandwagon started to fill back up after last week's win. And speaking of the Lions, they take on the Packers this Thursday night. And I saw this Instagram photo by the Michigan House Democrats featuring State Representative Jen Hill from the 109th District in the UP counties of Marquette, Alger, Berrega, and parts of Dickinson. Now, Representative Hill answered some fun questions on her birthday this week, but there was one question in particular which really caught my ear. So take a listen.
Rep Hill.
Hello.
I heard it is your birthday.
Today is my birthday.
Okay, can we do a challenge for your birthday?
Okay.
I want to see how many questions you can answer before we get to your office.
Okay.
All right. What goes with pasties? Ketchup or gravy?
Ketchup.
Okay. What does it mean to be a Youper?
Susu.
And what is your favorite Great Lake?
Lake Superior.
Okay, and your favorite inland lake?
Cisco Lake.
And is it pop or soda?
It's soda.
And what is your favorite UP beer?
I'd rather not say.
All right. Well, this one's a little bit more controversial. Detroit Lions or Green Bay Packers?
Green Bay Packers.
Okay. Trolls or Downstaters?
Oh, trolls.
All right, Representative Hill, I don't mind that you Youpers view those of us residing in the LP as trolls, and you know what, I'll give you a pass for being politically correct and refusing to say which beer is your favorite since we have so many awesome Michigan beers, I get it. But I just cannot believe you are pulling for the Green Bay Packers over our Detroit Lions? Look, I'll be honest, I'm a huge Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and they are my first love for family purposes, but I cannot imagine ever pulling for the Green Bay Packers over the Lions? All right, Representative Hill, I'm willing to have a talk about this travesty with you and much more sometime here in a future podcast because I'm sorry, you have crossed the line. Now, Representative Hill, and I am serious, I would love to have her on the show here soon. She is a fighter for common sense solutions or what I call progressive solutions designed to help Michigan recover from 40 years of Republican mismanagement. And one area where Representative Hill and her House and Senate Democratic colleagues are trying to help lead Michigan into the next generation of innovation and ingenuity is through the My Clean Energy Future legislation. Now, this legislation is vital towards making our state 100% carbon-free for electricity generation by 2040. Yes, 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 I know the original date for this legislation was 2035, and I wish the Democrats would have stuck to their original date, but I'll take 2040, even though I know we could get this done by 2035. Anyway, the legislation would enact energy waste reduction, making the Michigan Public Service Commission take equity, health, affordability, and effects of climate change into account when passing regulations. I mean, this would put some teeth. It would add some teeth to the Michigan Public Service Commission, which is supposed to protect the people and hold energy companies like DTE and Consumers Energy accountable for long-term power outages. I mean, there are many other aspects to this legislation, but knowing how climate change is affecting our state already, as we've witnessed through warmer winters, ice storms, floods, and unbreathable air. By the way, I talked about this recently, how Detroit recently ranked in the top 5 highest asthma rates in the country. It's time that we lead the country into changing our energy grid. As we saw this past year, climate change is only making storms more severe and common, which means more power outages. And I know that didn't make many of you happy this year, so why would you want that continuing into the future? Well, Michigan Democrats, are the ones offering solutions, while Michigan Republicans are busy trying to keep us stuck using 20th century energy technology. Right-wing Christian nationalist Republicans, who are all for destroying the planet because it'll bring Jesus here faster or whatever that is, they are fighting against these bills, which will make their oil and gas company donors very, very happy. Coming up later here in my last segment, I'm going to read to you some responses I received from a tweet that I posted regarding Ford's announcement that it was pausing construction, decided to put a pause on that EV battery plant in Marshall, located just a few miles away from Battle Creek. While there are some parts of the plant and that whole thing that I didn't necessarily care for, like the state giving hundreds of millions in corporate welfare to Ford, the plant was not only giving jobs to the area desperate for those jobs, but it was helping Michigan move into the future. Yet, the right wing celebrated Ford pausing the construction, since the right wing has been trying to shut it down using anti-Asian fear and hatred. But some of the right-wingers who responded to my tweet simply don't believe that we need to march into the future when it comes to energy generation and to combat climate change. And it's not astounding considering how the right-wing alternate universe has trained its followers to block the common sense area of their brains. Here was Democratic State Senator Dana Polhanke of Livonia at a committee hearing this week on the clean energy legislation talking about the brain-dead anti-climate change rhetoric that we get to hear all the time from the right.
Thank you, representatives from Ducks Unlimited and Michigan Trout Unlimited. I'm looking at your press release here entitled Conservation Leaders Highlight Urgent Need for Climate Resilience Legislation. And I just want to read a little snippet from that. Helping legislators understand the importance of what hunters, anglers are seeing on the ground is critical. We are the eyes and ears in the field. We see the devastation warming streams and more volatile weather events cause. We must first help legislators understand the impact of a changing climate and then ensure fish and wildlife are considered when climate resiliency legislation is being drafted. You know, you guys are far ahead on this issue, but unfortunately, what I'm seeing among some politicos. I listened to one of the presidential debates a couple weeks ago, and one of the presidential candidates said climate change is a hoax. And then you have a conference with one of the political parties, the leader of the political party said climate change is a hoax, like evolution. So, you know, thank you for coming here in this committee and getting us all on board with the scientific premise that climate change is real.
Yep, and as Representative Hill explained while giving a speech in front of environmentalists, lawmakers, students, and more at the Capitol this past week, a clean energy future, she says, is vital to Michigan's environmental, economic, and human health. Listen.
This winter, this February in the Upper Peninsula, it rained for 24 hours. Rained. We had to cancel the UP 200 sled dog race. Sled dog race, that takes snow, let me just be clear. That takes a lot of snow, not rain, not ice. Then a month later, we did get some snow, and then we got more rain, and then we had floods. We had disaster declarations in multiple counties. People lost thousands of dollars. These weather events are a clear sign, like the smoke that blanketed us across the whole state this summer, that climate change is a present threat to our well-being and the economic prosperity of our state. And we, as elected leaders, are going to prioritize the transition to clean energy. I'm standing here with my colleagues to say that now is the time to act on clean energy. We have the opportunity to create good-paying jobs by weatherizing our homes and businesses, making them more energy efficient, by building the batteries, solar panels, and the equipment that we need for a clean energy future with good union jobs.
People like Representative Hill and Senator Polhanke are on the common sense side of this issue, as are a majority of Michiganders. However, not so much for the state Republican Party, which held a conference on Mackinac Island this weekend featuring presidential candidate and biotech entrepreneur Vivek Ramaswamy. That's the guy that Senator Polhanke was talking about as he was the one who called climate change a hoax at a debate last month. I'm going to talk about Ramaswamy's appearance on Mackinac Island with those Michigan Republicans and more when John King, reporter from Michigan Advance, joins me here in just a moment. I'm also going to talk about John's experiences, by the way, working in right-wing radio as a progressive, as he was ousted from his longtime news director and morning show position at a Livingston County radio station a couple of years ago. It's something that I can kind of relate with, okay? But I would like to close out this week's monologue picking up where Representative Hill left off when she talked about how a new clean energy economy will create thousands of good-paying union jobs. Because the UAW this week is continuing its strike against the big three Detroit automakers, and for the first time in American history, an American president joined the picket line this week when Joe Biden arrived to march with UAW workers in Wayne.
You guys, UAW, you saved the automobile industry back in 2008 and before. Made a lot of sacrifices. Gave up a lot. And the companies were in trouble. But now they're doing incredibly well. And guess what? You should be doing incredibly well, too.
And President Biden was right there when he said the big three have enjoyed enormous success, and it's time now for the workers to enjoy similar success for their efforts. It was a bold move for Biden to be with the workers. Well, maybe it really wasn't so bold. Maybe it was the common sense thing to do. But I think it was the right thing to do politically because it painted a contrast with the Republican frontrunner for the presidential nomination, the man who was twice impeached, the man who was convicted in a civil trial for sexual assault, and the man who is now facing 91 felony indictments, the MAGA right-wing savior, Donald Trump himself. After Biden talked with UAW workers, Trump flew out here to Michigan, but not to show solidarity with workers. He just is showing up to divide workers. Trump isn't blaming the big three for corporate greed. Oh, no, he can't do that. He's not going to highlight how they benefited from his lavished corporate tax cuts, which he and the Republicans passed back in 2017. No, he won't bring that up either. Now, he's going to blame the transition to EV cars and blame Biden, even though the UAW is not opposing EV transition, and even though the rest of the world is heading that way as well. Here's Democratic State Senator Mallory McMorrow from Royal Oak on MSNBC the other day, and she knocked down any notion that Trump showed up in Michigan to support the UAW and workers in general.
Donald Trump is coming to Michigan to go to a non-union supplier. And what he's going to do is blame the EV transition. This is absolutely ridiculous. He is pitting workers against workers. And I got to tell you, Chinese automakers are salivating at the opportunity that America is going to flinch on EVs so that they can come in and dominate the market. And if he's successful, he destroys the American auto industry.
You see, Trump's not speaking with the UAW in Detroit, which is understandable since UAW President Sean Fain told Trump that he's not welcome. It's just not the UAW who doesn't want to hear from Trump. Other unions are through with his brand of fake populism as well. I talked about this last week. I'm going to bring it up again. United Association of Union Plumbers and Pipefitters General President Mark McManus illustrated exactly how Trump is and has always been against the working class. And this is what he said, and I'm quoting. When Donald Trump was first elected president, he invited me into the White House during the first days of his administration and promised that he would pass the largest infrastructure bill in generations. He claimed to be a builder, just like us. But after 4 years, one thing was clear. When it comes to the bread and butter issues our members care about, fair wages, safe job sites, and the ability to retire with dignity that we earned, Donald Trump is just another fraud. Yeah, Trump is a working class fraud who has never cared one bit about average Americans. Author Stephen Greenhouse reminded everyone this week in the Detroit Free Press how Trump not only rescinded Obama-era protections guaranteeing time and a half overtime pay for millions of workers, but he reversed safety inspections for coal mines and refused to push for a higher minimum wage. On top of that, Greenhouse correctly notes that Trump's Supreme Court justices all sided with corporations and management over unions. You see, Trump didn't travel here to show solidarity with UAW workers. His goal is to divide them. His goal is to divide all workers. He's not going to address the UAW's main concerns of, let's say, wages, pensions, a return of cost of living pay raises, a four-day work week, and more. No, Trump's instead going to focus on the universal move to EV cars and how it's woke or something like that. Don't forget, Michigan Democrats repealed the right-wing Republican right to work for less law to help working people. And we know that Donald Trump has never nor will ever support working people and that he wants to crush unions and the future of just not the American auto industry, but all of America. Coming up, John King with Michigan Advanced. And Rich, thanks again for all your help on leftoflansing.com. You're listening to LOL.
You're listening to Left of Lansing. If the podcast isn't enough and you are in need of more Pat, follow him on Twitter and like him on Facebook. Also, don't forget, you can read more of his thoughts and hear an archive of past episodes on leftoflansing.com.
You know, can I just say that I'm never going to apologize for criticizing the national media. I will give them credit where credit is due and when it is due, of course. But one thing I'm not liking so far about how they're covering the 2024 presidential race is that everything has to be a horse race. It has to always be that way. Rather than actually talking about the issues, the national media just seems like they want to talk about the horse race. They just want something close for ratings. The corporate national media is simply looking for excitement, and they are willing to risk fascism taking over this country just so that they can get ratings. Oh, and for the corporations to get a tax cut or two. I'm not going to apologize for criticizing them when they have to be criticized. It just gets my blood boiling. That being said, my favorite online publication for political news combined with some insightful progressive commentary is Michigan Advanced. I've talked with the editor-in-chief, Susan Demas, the assistant editor and reporter, Anna Gustafson, as we talked about the right-wing attacks on the Goshen EV plant in Big Rapids. And I just recently talked with Danielle Atkinson from Mothering Justice, who wrote a spot-on op-ed on why Michigan must be a paid family leave state. So this week, I'm happy now to have John King from Michigan Advanced here on Left of Lansing. John's been busy writing some great stories on a range of issues, but like me, John also has some experience on the challenges and shortcomings of working in the right-wing radio world. So here to discuss all that with me is John King. John, thanks a lot for being on this week.
Yeah, thank you, Pat. I'm glad to be here.
Glad to have you on. If you don't mind, I'd like to start by talking first about your story about the Mackinac Republican Leadership Conference. And it had to be, for those who were attending and for those who were covering, I guess it had to be kind of like an alternate reality for the rest of us. But you reported specifically on one of the conference's highlight speakers, Ohio biotech entrepreneur and Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy. And he seemed to be making some noise, at least this is my perception. He seemed to be making some noise earlier in the summer, but like everyone else in the Republican presidential field, he hasn't really made a dent in Donald Trump's overwhelming lead. Regardless, the things that he says really does appear to resonate with that audience. And that seemed to be your read from how it all went down.
Yeah, oh, he was enthusiastically greeted, certainly by the crowd. And I think the message that he delivered is exactly what they wanted to hear, which I guess you could say that's exactly why he delivered it. And we did focus on Mr. Ramaswamy only because he's the only presidential candidate who was at the conference. In years past, almost every GOP presidential contender would show up. He was the only one this year. And so we thought it was interesting to see what he had to say. And yeah, the message enthusiastically received.
So he's the only Republican presidential candidate who appeared at this conference on Mackinac Island. Is that because of the dysfunction of the entire Michigan Republican Party? Is that why he was the only one and no one else showed up from that field?
I would say that that would be the conventional wisdom. I mean, if you're Ron DeSantis, who's running a distant second, and Mr. Ramaswamy is running a distant third behind that to former President Trump, there's no upside to coming to Mackinac in the sense that you have this dysfunctional state party. And we saw that the ballroom was about half full. And there have been just one embarrassing story after another leading into this conference, especially having to do with the state party's finances, its lack of transparency, and its leadership or lack thereof. And so, yeah, I think the other candidates just saw there's no upside here. To Mr. Ramaswamy, I suppose in that sense, because no one else was coming, maybe that made it attractive to him, that he would then sort of stand out. And so in that sense, he did.
John, you printed what Ramaswamy said were his priorities in that speech, which I have to say sounded pretty much like all the priorities for all Republican candidates nowadays, especially MAGA Republicans, Christian nationalist Republicans, maybe except for former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie, maybe. But here's what Ramaswamy said were the priorities that were important to him, and I'm just quoting here from your story. Speaking the truth, not just when it's easy, but when it's hard, this is what we're doing today. God is real. There are two genders. Fossil fuels are a requirement for human prosperity. Reverse racism is racism. An open border is not a border. Parents determine the education of their children. So he says the basic phrases or trip words that will get reactions from that audience, like fossil fuels, the border, two genders, and how parents should determine the education of their children, which they already do, and yet the right wing doesn't think parents should support kids when it comes to LGBTQ rights. But regardless, that's pretty much what was brought up a lot, I'm guessing, at that conference. And so how does Ramaswamy, somebody like him, differentiate himself from the rest of the Republican field, including Donald Trump? Because I believe he even said during that speech that Donald Trump is the greatest president of the 21st century, one of the greatest of all time. So
he did.
I'm not exactly sure how somebody like Ramaswamy even makes a dent in the field. I mean,
and he's never really quite articulated the sense of, if you completely support Donald Trump, then why are you running against him for the nomination? The litany of phrases that you just write off, that came near the end of his presentation. And it was really, in a sense, he delivered it almost in like an evangelical sermon, in that each one drew more applause and more, and he threw them out there. And to use an overused phrase, it really was like throwing red meat to the lions. The crowd just loved it and ate it up. And he's obviously that pattern, that line, those lines, I think, have been well tested, and they work with, the MAGA crowd, and they certainly did there. But for someone like Mr. Ramaswamy, I guess the thing that is interesting to me is that he is this biotech entrepreneur. He's a Harvard grad. He went to Yale Law School, and yet he's out here espousing just an outright anti-scientific rhetoric, climate denialism, that it's hard for me to believe that he personally really believes these things. I don't see how you can graduate Harvard and Yale and then come out and say things that are, just clearly not in line with the scientific fact. And so I think if you're Harvard or Yale, you have to really wonder if you want people mentioning that he is a grad. Again, the crowd loves it. The thing, again, this is just my personal impression. I think they like Mr. Ramaswamy as a spokesman. I think they like him in the position that he's in, which is a junior to somebody like Donald Trump. It would be very surprising to me that this MAGA Christian nationalist crowd would ever really want to see him in the leadership position. But stranger things have happened. So
he knows he's not going to win the nomination. So knowing his audience, knowing that his message is resonating with others, do you see him really doing this just maybe for a chance to get his own spot, his own show, let's say on Fox News?
It's hard to say. I mean, certainly that could be what the result is, and that wouldn't be shocking. It would seem to me that I would like to think he'd have some higher ambition than that, although it doesn't matter to me. The forces that he is in service of, I think, are dark, and I think they are anti-democratic, small d. Why he is servicing them, it certainly is some personal agenda that he wants to advance. Just seeing him end up with some talk show on Fox or wherever, I could see that. But potentially, maybe he sees himself in some sort of other political realm in terms of, Congress, Senate, governor, who knows, where he might be able to take this message, use this experience in the presidential race, and then at the right time, sort of bow out and then take political capital and maybe advance it elsewhere. Okay. Time will tell.
Okay, so maybe he thinks maybe he could start maybe a building a movement of his own. Maybe.
I suppose, but like I said before, it's hard for me to see that the hard right MAGA crowd, Christian nationalists, are going to really fall behind, Mr. Ramaswamy, who's Hindu. I thought it was interesting when he says there is one God. I think a lot of theologians would go, well, that's an interesting statement for you to make, because I think if you were to get Hindu theologians and evangelical Christian theologians and you'd say, is this the same God? You'd probably have some interesting conversations, we'll say.
John King from Michigan Advanced is on the podcast here this week. All right. I read your piece this week on former Michigan Congressman Mike Rogers. He's running for the Republican nomination of Democratic U.S. Senator Debbie Stabenow's seat since she is retiring here next year. And Rogers released a video recently saying,
"I don't recognize this justice system. I'm Mike Rogers, former federal law enforcement officer and candidate for Senate in the great state of Michigan. Look, I'm for holding everyone accountable if they've broken the law, no matter who they are. But what we are seeing right now is a politically motivated DOJ waging war against the leading Republican presidential candidate on behalf of President Biden. This is a dangerous precedent, and it needs to be stopped. When I'm in the Senate, I'll stand up to Joe Biden, unelected bureaucrats, and fight to restore the integrity of the Department of Justice."
So it's obvious to me, John, it's obvious to me that Mike Rogers, who I think he always tried to portray himself as kind of more of a moderate when he was a congressman, it's obvious to me that he is sounding more like an extremist because he knows that's his only chance at really winning the nomination since, as you say in your story, he's not trusted by many in the Republican Party already.
No, not at all. You know, he's somebody who, former FBI agent, served, you know, many years as chair of the Powerful House Intelligence Committee. He is the absolute representation of the deep state to MAGA Republicans. And former FBI agent and former CNN host, these are not two descriptors that MAGA Republicans go, wow, are very impressed with. And so, you know, even when he would post innocuous things, you know, hey, I'm going to be talking about such and such on CNN tomorrow or, you know, this morning or whatever, I would just see the comments would just kind of just almost immediately would jump in and just say, you know, whatever, rhino. This has been going on for several years. And, you know, he was critical of Donald Trump early on in his presidency, was very critical in terms of Donald Trump's assessment of Vladimir Putin, his closeness to Putin. And so it's really difficult for me to see politically how he is going to be able to turn the tide in this primary in which you have a party that is wholly, wholly captured by the Trump MAGA Republicans. It's very difficult for me to see that. But money won't be an issue, but money is not the only thing that counts, not as much as it used to.
I also have to believe, I mean, I know that the Democrats have already attacked him on this front, but I would have to believe that his Republican challengers will also attack him for not being here for many years when he moved down to Florida. I've just got to think they're not going to let that sit. They'll go after him for that.
They already have. Yeah. No, they won't let that go. And the joke's already made, you know, a Florida man, .. And I've already seen him. Yeah. So that will certainly be a weakness, a liability that will be exploited. I think, you know, as we saw in Michigan, I covered Mike Rogers for the entirety of his time in Congress from his district. And you're right. He was somebody who portrayed himself as a moderate, more or less was a moderate, and a moderate in the George Bush era sense. But he also was in a very safe Republican district that entire time. I mean, he only won the district itself, which ironically was more or less the same district that Debbie Stabenow had represented before she went to the Senate. And he only won it by like 111 votes in the 2000 election. And then it was gerrymandered to be a safe Republican district. And he served in that safe Republican district the rest of his time in Congress. So he was able to very easily ride that middle rail. It's a completely different ballgame. A, as we were just talking about, trying to win the primary is one that I think is, that's a very difficult task. The only way he can win the primary is to somehow attract the hard right MAGA dominated crowd. If he is successful in doing that, which I think is a hard task, then he finds himself, now he has to run a statewide race where that is not going to be a recipe for success. And he's already shown himself to be, I think, somewhat out of touch on the issue of abortion, in the sense of sort of the few times he's been asked about it, he almost seems like, God, why are you bringing up this abortion thing so much? I'm like, yeah, get used to it. And the Democrats will, I'm sure, will make full use of that in there. So he's got a very, very tough path to win the primary. And then I think even a tougher one to win the general, should he do that. So it's going to be interesting. We'll say that.
Since you're familiar with him, are you surprised that he's decided to run for the seat, knowing where the state Republican Party has gone here over the last decade?
I guess I'm not surprised that he's running for it. I am surprised, and I have to say disappointed, the way he's doing it. It seems to me this is another Republican who is willing to leverage, mortgage, pawn his reputation in the Trump era to try and win some potential short-term political gain. And I'm like, it's disappointing to see somebody who's a former FBI agent who then says the FBI is corrupt. What? who basically tries to say that the entire prosecution of Donald Trump, all 91 felony counts in four jurisdictions, state and federal, this is all orchestrated by the Biden Department of Justice as a political persecution. What? It's disappointing. And I think that there's other people who, you know, who are if they still exist, I think who are moderate Republicans that were excited to hear that he might be getting back in. I think they're disappointed too to see this. But politically, I don't know how else he could win it. So I guess to go back to your original question, I guess in a certain sense, you do have to say, yeah, I guess I am surprised. Knowing what you have to do to win the primary, why would you get in this race? I don't know.
Let's switch to another story that you wrote here, John, earlier this month. And like all of your other pieces, it was fantastic. And it's titled Meet the Parents Who Say Their Rights Are Being Ignored by the Parental Rights Movement. Now, you write about the parents who are fighting back against these so-called parental rights movement parents who are trying to ban discussions on the history of race in the country or ban books on LGBTQ plus issues or trying to stop teachers from talking about sexual orientation or gender discussions. Or basically, let's just say it, they don't want American history being taught. And I've talked about these groups like Moms for Liberty, who received lots of help from deep-pocketed right-wing contributors. But I haven't been able to really talk much with those parents who have kids of color or LGBTQ plus kids who say not only are their kids being harmed, but so is the nation's public school system. John, you got to talk to some of those parents. So what did you learn most about them while writing the story?
You know, I think the one thing that they all had in common, I mean, you mentioned Danielle Atkinson, you spoke with previously for Mothering Justice. I spoke with her for this article. You know, she's the mother of six, you know, including children of color and LGBTQ. And what she and the other parents that I spoke with, I think the common thread through all this is a real, I think, a sense of anger that their children are deemed to not be worthy of representation. And that is really, I think, what began as sort of a subtext or an inference has now just become an outright projection from groups like Moms for Liberty that these children should not be represented and that their parents themselves, especially parents of LGBTQ kids, are not to be trusted, are somehow using their children for some political or social gain. Like I said, I think the one thing that really comes through all is a real sense of anger and frustration on the part of these parents. Not so much that the groups like Moms for Liberty and others like that, it's obvious who they are and what they represent. I think that the frustration and the anger comes from the how easily this idea of parental rights has just been sort of swallowed whole in our society, and that people aren't being called out for what they are, that they're not being called out for being Christian nationalists who are really pushing a theocratic view of government and education. And so it was interesting to be able to give these parents a platform to talk about their own experiences with their kids and their concern about what the future is going to hold for them.
I like the quote that you had from Julia Pulver, who's a mom of a trans son, cisgender son, and two non-binary children, and also a dear friend of this podcast. And she said, it's not parents' rights, it's only certain parents' rights. And I thought she nailed it there. And that's really the battle line, I think, right there. Do you see this fight continuing long term, or do you view this more as just kind of a reactionary battle that the right decided to pick up on because they were freaking out seeing how Gen Z is trending more and more progressive? They know their ideas won't work alone. So they're thinking, oh man, if we can just maybe stifle some of the information that these kids are getting in schools, this is maybe our only chance.
I mean, the answer is yes. I think that is certainly a part of the motivation. And I wasn't able to really get into this in the article. There have been other articles that have delved into this, I think, much better. But the sense that this is just the latest chapter, this battle, I guess you could say, over public education has been going on for generations. Yeah. Certainly, you can go back to the 1950s and into the 60s with desegregation and see a lot of the things that we're hearing now, the seeds were planted then. And so a lot of these themes are, especially over color, LGBTQ, you know, obviously came later. But it's the same paradigm in the sense that really only white Christians should really have a say in the narrative of education. And really, education should be a tool in the service of white Christians. And when I talk about education, I mean public education. And anything that deters from that is to be attacked and denied. And so this is more or less, I think, just the latest battleground. And I think it will continue. You know, I think back to the early 2000s and how Republicans cynically but successfully fought gay marriage and ballot proposals in states like Michigan. And they were very much able to get voters to turn out, especially in 2004 in the presidential race. They used that to draw voters to the polls and, hey, while you're there, vote for Republicans. I mean, it worked. And as we saw, a lot of those marriage bans, of course, then fell apart over the next decade. I'm hopeful. The optimistic part of me is hopeful that, you know, maybe we'll see the same thing here. I think they're trying to use the same playbook in the sense of we can draw people to the polls, you know, make them think that this is about kids' safety and, you know, we're just doing it for the kids. And if they can get people to come to the polls under this guise that they can somehow get them to vote for Republicans en masse, I don't think it will be as successful this time only because I think that the Republican Party has become so extreme to the mainstream. It has moved so far to the right that I think people that were pretty much centrist are seen as being leftists. And you go, actually, no, we didn't move. It's like the Republicans have moved so far to the right now that what used to be the center seems like the far left. So I'm hopeful that that's what will be the case here, that this will burn itself out, I suppose.
Yeah.
But time will tell.
Okay, well, while I have you here just for a couple more minutes, I was wondering if we could go into a little bit about your life in News Talk Radio. Just wondering, how long were you in that business? And did you see yourself doing that for the rest of your career?
Yeah, I was in radio for 35 years.
Okay.
And I guess I had hoped that maybe I had timed it just right, that I could sort of ride out the rest of my career in broadcast radio, and maybe my career could sort of come to its natural conclusion at the same time as terrestrial radio was writing itself into the ground. But I was bucked off a little earlier than I had anticipated.
Well, let's go into that, because you worked at a station in Livingston County. Can we say the station, or would you rather not?
You can.
Okay, I will. It was WHMI, right, in Livingston County. So I know that you've got a good idea on what it's like to be a progressive working in a conservative area and in conservative talk radio in general. You weren't just the news director, but you were also part of the morning show. So I guess maybe one of my questions to you is, as a progressive, did you have to tamp down your viewpoints as part of that morning show, not as the news director, but as that morning show? Or is that just something that particular morning show, it didn't really deal all that much in politics, that you just talked about other things?
Yeah, as far as the morning show goes, we really didn't delve too much into politics. If only when politics would become, if there was a political issue or
right,
something that became so pervasive that you got to talk about it, we would. But we certainly were not a political talk show in any sense of the word. And in fact, my morning show partner, Mike Marino, and I, we learned pretty early on. I mean, we were there for 20 years. We were the morning show hosts for 20 years. And we learned pretty early on, that's really not what the audience wanted from the morning show. They really didn't want political discourse. I think they got that elsewhere, and that's not what they wanted from us. They really wanted entertainment. They wanted some information. You know, let us know where the traffic jam is, what's the weather, what's the big story, and maybe play some Lynyrd Skynyrd if you could in between. That'd be great. And so we kind of found that niche. But as I was alluding to earlier, where I think that, and it was, you know, Livingston County has always been a very conservative county. This, I knew that when I hired in, knew that the entire time I worked there. But I think that as the Republican Party specifically and the conservative movement itself moved, just kept becoming more and more extreme to the right. Holding a centrist position seemed like you were some ultra liberal. And I would always argue, well, no. And I also was very clear to say that whatever my personal political views might be, they would not intrude on the news coverage. I took my duties as the news director extremely seriously. And that really was my main role. Hosting the morning show was secondary. And so I always would say, when people might have a question about a story, I would just say, please point to me what in this story is incorrect. Can you please point to me what is incorrect? You know, I think like any human being, you would make a mistake here or there. And if a mistake was made, I would own up to it and correct it like any good journalist would. But mostly, the vast majority of anything, I just don't like that you're reporting this, is what it would be. Now, they would never say those words, but that was really the ultimate conclusion. I wish you would stop reporting on this because it makes me uncomfortable. That was my interpretation of a lot of what I was hearing. And so, yeah, it became untenable at a certain point. I could no longer maintain the integrity of the news department. And so it was, based on the changing desires of what was asked of me. And so it just became clear that this wasn't going to work out.
Right. No, understandable. And so then that eventually just led to your dismissal. How'd that all go down?
Basically, yeah, I have to be careful in the sense that, you know, what I can say is this. I can say that I was able to successfully conclude my employment with the management and ownership of the station at that time. I was told that my services would no longer be needed. What I saw, which was reported on by others, was that there was a coordinated effort in the community led by members of the local Republican Party and by the local chapter of Moms for Liberty, whose head is now the head of the Livingston County Republican Party, I might add, to oust me. And they were very vocal in their desire to see me exit. And they targeted advertisers. And they specifically really went after, in ways that were infuriating and I think unacceptable, they went after the fact that I have a trans son. You know, really, I think grossly attacked my son and me. And so, it created this very hostile, vitriolic atmosphere that just resulted in the decision that I should leave. And as I said, I was told my services would no longer be needed. I was given a date by which my employment would come to an end. And fortunately, the person I worked with, Mike Marino, such a great guy, he, you know, was not in that target, we'll say, but he really was the one that said, hey, let's go on our own. Let's leave now. You know, on a particular Friday, weeks before I was due to have my last day there, we signed off on the air. I think we did it as classy as you could. We didn't talk about any negativity. We just thanked the listeners for the 20 years of letting us, come and be a part of their lives and just said, we're moving on. And we have.
All right. Well, listen, we just have about 90 seconds here. I just want to ask you, after being away from it now for a little bit of time, how do you feel about it? And I ask that because I still have some sadness that while people are always going to have their beliefs and biases, I feel bad. Basic facts cannot be basic facts anymore. And right. I feel like corporate talk radio made its bed long ago with the right wing, that it's driving terrestrial radio to become more and more irrelevant. I really believe that. And I was in that business for 25 years. So it sucks to say that because radio plays or used to play a vital role in keeping our communities informed. So just was wondering your feelings on that.
Yeah, absolutely. The real frustrating thing about that is that terrestrial broadcast radio could, and I want to underline that word, could still be a viable medium. It could still play a vital role. And yet the ownership, the corporate ownership of these station groups have essentially decided to commit suicide, industrial suicide, if you will, and homogenized an industry that is only successful when it is based on local, personal and local. And they've homogenized it and they just decided to ruin it. And now ask anyone under the age of 40 if they listen to radio, you're going to get a blank look. And frankly, ask anyone under the age of 50, you know, when did you listen to radio last? Do you own a radio? Radio increasingly is a 55 plus medium. And frankly, it's for people that are, you know, in their vehicles. That's the last real holdout, I think, for terrestrial broadcast radio. It's not going to end well. Let's put it that way.
Agreed. John King with the Michigan Advance. Thank you so much for taking some time out here to be part of this episode. I greatly appreciate it. And hey, come back sometime and we can talk some more. I love it.
Yeah, I would be happy to do that. Thank you so much.
A podcast devoted to intelligence, sanity, and freedom, or otherwise known as progressive politics. It's Left of Lansing with your host, Pat Johnston. Need to tell Pat where he's wrong? Or do you actually want to praise Pat? leftoflansing@gmail.com is how to reach him. Here's Pat.
Hey, John and I talked off mic, and he said that he would love to come back on and talk more about his experiences in right-wing radio and also to give more opinions about radio itself. And you know what, John? I look forward to it. And I completely concur with John when he described how terrestrial radio is indeed riding itself into the ground. I mean, that's why I started this podcast. I could bypass the corporate right-wing AM radio structure and deliver my progressive message right to you. You, fellow progressives, and you know what? I'm hoping a lot of independents, maybe even some who have voted Republican before, are listening to this and saying, you know what? This guy's got a point. Even if I don't have a point, I appreciate you for listening, and you can always email me, leftoflansing@gmail.com. I have this podcast, so I no longer have to worry about censoring myself anymore. And it is a really, really good feeling. And thank you so much for listening. All right. Time for a Left of Lansing last call. Okay, so I talked earlier about how Ford announced that it was pausing construction of that multi-billion dollar electric vehicle battery plant in Marshall that's near Battle Creek. Now, this plant has its opponents who've been using the same kinds of arguments that opponents have been making against that Goshen EV battery plant around Big Rapids. And they've stoked this anti-Asian fear and hatred and bigotry, saying that building these plants will lead to China taking over the area and also the entire state of Michigan. And these arguments are so ridiculous because there are actually reasons, legitimate reasons, why maybe some people don't want the plant in the first place. Like, I've talked about how nobody really likes corporate welfare. At least I don't think everybody likes corporate welfare. That's one reason to oppose this plant. But the right wing in the state of Michigan, headed by the right wing Republican Party, they only want to use anti-Asian bigotry and hatred to stoke fear among people living in these areas where these plants are being built. But after Ford made its announcement to pause the Marshall plant this week, which they say, well, they haven't, but they sort of alluded to, maybe one reason is because of the UAW strike. Yeah, I think they're trying to play a little hardball here. Man, did the right wing celebrate in unison, which is strange because they were all silent during the entire Republican Governor Rick Snyder administration when he kept making plane trip after plane trip out to China to convince Chinese companies to set up shop right here in Michigan. Anyway, here's MAGA Christian fundamentalist and who's also part of the state education board. Her name is Nikki Snyder. Oh, and by the way, Nikki is running for Debbie Stabenow's Senate seat. Yeah, just remember that there, Mike Rogers. She posted the following here on Twitter about the Marshall plant being paused, and here's what she had to say.
Hey, Michigan, as news breaks about Ford halting construction on their new taxpayer-funded EV battery plant in Marshall, we are also seeing UAW negotiations continue. This is an opportunity to be reminded that the EV battery agenda is being built on the backs of the American worker, especially those right here in Michigan.
Oh, and I forgot to point out, this is what she wrote on top of this message that I just played for you. Nikki Snyder said, the EV battery agenda is being built on the backs of the American worker and taxpayer in partnership with China. This is a problem. I mean, imagine being so giddy over the fact that Michiganders could lose out on some jobs. So I tweeted the following. I said, Nikki Snyder would rather EV batteries be built elsewhere but Michigan? Where else would she want them? Ohio? Indiana? EV batteries are the future, and the right wing can only play on anti-Asian fear-mongering and hate. They're only fighting against this plant because it's happening during Governor Whitmer's administration. And that's really the driving force here, right? I mean, they only hate this plant and the Goshen plant because it's being constructed during Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer's administration. They don't want her getting the credit. But it is true that it seems like right-wingers like Nikki Snyder would rather Michigan be stuck in the past and allow states like Ohio and Indiana to eat up the entire EV battery markets of the future while Michigan is just left out in the dust. I played Democratic State Senator Mallory McMorrow earlier here on this podcast today, and she criticized Donald Trump's anti-EV battery stance as giving the entire market away to China. But while I did receive some nice responses from those who agreed with my tweet, here are some others who didn't. And here, I'll read one right now. It's really a weird situation. I'm a hardcore conservative, seriously, as far right as you are left, no doubt. Okay. And my main objection to the battery plant is it's stupid of Ford to build it in Michigan, where there are plenty of right-to-work states where it can be done cheaper and easier as well. Then again, I'm not really in the market for a Ford EV because Tesla is cheaper and better in a myriad of ways, so no use bothering with more expensive substandard models that are harder to buy anyway. So, all the way around. I just sort of assume it'll go bankrupt anyway, so I guess it's just a waste of taxpayer money, though fleecing the taxpayers to line the pockets of corrupt UAW leaders is par for the course in the state. Wow, he really made... I don't know what kind of point he made. First of all, he's trying to say that Ford should go to right-to-work states, which again means that they're no longer here in Michigan, which again means, yeah, maybe they're getting it done for cheaper, but maybe the effort is cheaper as well. Did you ever think of that? No, you're a right-winger. Why would you? And if right-to-work was so incredibly awesome, why did Michigan continue to lose the population race? Come on now. Right-to-work was supposed to be a boon for the state. Well, yeah, it was a boon for corporations, not a boon for the workers. So this guy is already using an EV car from Tesla, which I found interesting, which Elon Musk, I have to remind him, has enjoyed lavish tax incentives and tax breaks throughout his life. Is this guy mad that the government lined Elon Musk's pockets? Somehow I don't think it does, since this guy probably loves that Musk has declared a war on woke. And it's really sad that this guy has bought into the corporate line that UAW workers and his fellow workers who are just fighting for better pay, that they are the problem, not corporations. Well done, sir. The right wing has really earned its money with you. Here's another response to my tweet. EVs are not the future. They don't hold up well under harsh Michigan winters, and nobody can afford to buy them. Our grid can't support everything having an EV either. Okay, so EV cars aren't the best and most efficient at the moment. Okay, fine. But they will improve and get cheaper through time. That happens with all kinds of technology. And by supporting the Democrats' My Clean Energy legislation, which will revamp our energy grid and make it more reliable and cheaper, hey, EV cars will be quite the bargain in due time. And here's another tweet I received. What's wrong with the internal combustion engine? Okay, wait, that was seriously a response to my original tweet. Well, other than it's creating pollution, which is affecting the air we breathe, the water we drink and swim in, creating warmer winters in Michigan. I mean, isn't it just so awesome to stare at mud on cloudy 42-degree days? That's what we had for the entire month of January last year. You recall that, or maybe you don't want to recall that. That's because our winters are warming. Oh, and also not to mention that sticking with the internal combustion engine means it makes us more reliant on multinational oil and gas corporations, which, by the way, sir, receives billions of dollars in tax breaks and incentives from our government. Yeah, what in the world could be wrong with the internal combustion engine? I have no idea. In the meantime, EV cars are the future. And while I think Ford's decision to pause the project should once again make us question the validity of throwing welfare to corporations in the hopes that they will build plants in our state, one thing is for certain. Auto companies are moving ahead with EV cars, whether the mega crowd likes it or not. I'll include a link to that tweet plus all of those responses in the show notes section of this week's episode located at leftoflansing.com.
You're listening to the Left of Lansing podcast. The music you're hearing is by Wander Beats. To hear the latest project, check out Space Leopard on your favorite streaming site. Now back to our favorite progressive voice in Michigan. It's Pat Johnston.
That's going to do it for this edition of Michigan's premier progressive podcast. Thanks again to John King for joining me this week and offering his insights. And please don't forget to visit MichiganAdvance.com for fantastic reporting and insightful progressive commentary on Michigan and national politics. That's MichiganAdvance.com. You can always contact me at leftoflansing@gmail.com. I'm on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook as well. Don't forget, of course, about leftoflansing.com. Next week, I will talk with author Bryn Tannehill, who wrote a book a couple of years ago called American Fascism. And we're going to talk about how the MAGA Christian nationalist movement is pushing us towards fascism. Until then, please take care of yourself and remember, take the battle to them. Thank you, Michigan!
The Left of Lansing podcast was produced by Pat Johnston, written by Pat Johnston, researched by Pat Johnston, edited by Pat Johnston and hosted by, yes, Pat Johnston. Technical assistance by Dr. Heather. And thanks to our good friend Kirsten for the awesome podcast logo. Remember to visit leftoflansing.com for more news and information. Thanks again for listening to the Left of Lansing podcast.